Okay. Well, good day, everyone. As you can see from the gratuitous plug behind me, I'm with the Gelato Group at UNSW, and we have been doing a project on some of the I/O scheduling stuff in Linux. The people involved with that list there, it's myself, Aaron Carroll, who's an undergrad student doing a thesis with us. He's here as well. And Peter Chubb, who couldn't be here, unfortunately. So basically is what I'm going to talk about exactly what we're doing in the project, a bit about how I/O scheduling actually works in the kernel at the moment, some of the tools we're using to test performance and find bugs and analyze what's going on and so on. A bit about the performance characteristics of the different schedulers that are in the tree. A bit about the bugs that we have found so far and ones that we haven't actually fixed. And a bit about what happens when you start using RAID. Things get a bit tricky there with scheduling. And finally, a few ideas that we have for the future and a few bit at the end there about what happens when you go to devices which actually aren't disks because they behave quite a bit differently. So what we're actually doing is running a whole bunch of different kind of workloads on the different schedulers that are in there at the moment and seeing how they behave. So the end goal here is we want to be able to produce a white paper that tells people how to tune their scheduler, what schedule to use, and how to tune it with all these tunable parameters that they have for their particular workload. So as far as we can tell, no one's actually done that in a systematic kind of way. So developing some supporting tools to go with that. And if we find bugs along the way, we'll hopefully fix those. And we already have fixed some. And yeah, this is all funded by Google and HP. So this is kind of a picture of where we're dealing with in the kernel here. So below the block layer, you on the way to the driver, block requests actually go through these schedulers. And so there's a queue above the scheduler that it gets its requests on and chooses requests from, and it passes them on to the driver in the dispatch queue. So what we're actually doing with schedulers here is a few things. First of all, you've got a disk, right? You've got a head, it moves across the platters, and doing that takes time. So you actually want to minimize the amount of head movement that you want to do. So that'll improve performance there. You also want to minimize your transfer overheads, so the less requests you actually issue to the device, the less interrupts you have to handle, the faster things go. And you also want to make sure you don't starve any requests at least, or possibly go into real per-process fairness. So in the kernel at the moment, we have a choice of four I/O schedulers. These are NOAP, deadline, anticipatory, and CFQ. And I'll explain each of those a bit in the following slides. So kind of your basic scheduler here is NOAP, which is slightly poorly named because it's not really NOAP. It does do merging. So it's 120 lines of code. It's really simple. Then you've got deadline. So it's kind of the first real scheduler. So it's a bit more complicated. It does kind of a variant of the classical C-scan algorithm, which is basically, it's called modified elevator as well. So you start at one end of the disk, service requests up to the other end of the disk, and then you go back and start from the beginning again. And that has the advantage of never starving anything. And it also compared to the actual elevator that goes back and forth and services requests both ways, it doesn't end up favoring sectors in the middle. So on top of that, we also have these things called deadlines. So the way that works is every request that comes in is assigned a deadline, which is a fixed amount of time in the future. So if that time is reached and a request has not yet been serviced, the scheduler will attempt to expedite the handling of that. And it's got these batches, so it handles reads and writes separately. So you do a bunch of reads, then you do a bunch of writes. It actually favors reads because that helps your real-time performance, or your interactive performance, rather. And there's a tunable called write-starved, which controls how much it will actually favor reads over writes. So the next one is anticipatory. So this kind of evolved from deadline, more or less. It's about 1,000 more lines of code in there. So the main feature it adds is this thing called anticipation. So this is an optimization that you can use if you've got a process issuing synchronous I/O and it's also sequential. What you can do is, rather than waiting, or rather than switching to another process and handling something from it while you're waiting for this process that's doing sequential I/O to do another I/O, you can actually just wait a bit. And this actually ends up being faster than going somewhere completely different and then having to come back. So that's really nice when it works. You can't always do that because not everything does a synchronous sequential I/O. The other thing anticipatory does is it will also sometimes seek backwards. And there's a tunable that controls that. So that does give you better performance often. And then the most complicated scheduler in the kernel is CFQ, which stands for Complete Fair Queuing. So this adds a whole bunch of stuff which essentially assigns time slices to processes to give them a fair share of access to the disk. That only actually works for synchronous I/O at the moment. And it also has these priority classes and different priorities within the classes. So you've got real-time I/O, which is more important than best effort I/O, which is more important than kind of background I/O. So those are the schedulers that we have at the moment. We've actually added some new ones for testing purposes. First one is called FIFO. It's really dumb. It just issues requests in exactly the order that they come in. So that gives us a baseline for comparing performance there. If you're doing worse than FIFO, something's kind of wrong. Another one we've added is called VR. Now, this is kind of an old idea. There's a paper about it that was published years ago. So it's got this parameter R, which is the penalty for reversing direction. So if you have a large R, it'll end up doing C-scan. If you have a small R, it'll do shortest seek time first. Now, that is really handy if all you care about is throughput. So if you are doing kind of batch runs or something, and you don't really care how long individual runs might take, but just your overall throughput, SSTF is a good choice, and you can't actually do that with any of the current schedulers. So we're currently working the bugs out of VR. When it doesn't lock up the machine anymore, we might push it upstream. Okay. So these are some of the tools we're using just to test performance. So IOZone is a throughput benchmark that everyone uses, so we kind of have to as well. FIO is kind of this programmable workload generator. It's really handy. AIOD is kind of similar to FIO, but it's a little bit different. It's not important. And ReAIM7 is kind of this whole system benchmark. It's been around for ages. Everyone uses it as well. So there's some disk-intensive tests that it does, which we use to see how the disk is going. All right, so really handy tool is Blocktrace. It's great. It tells you exactly what's going on inside the block layer. It records all the events that occur. So you've got, you know, queue events when things first get submitted into the block layer. You know, you've got your completion events when they finally get completed and all the different bits in between. You can see exactly when everything happens. And there's a post-processing tool called BTT, which is distributed with Blocktrace. So it'll tell you things like calculate the bandwidth that you're getting, calculate the all your different latencies between different stages and so forth. BT replay. Now, this is really handy for us. So what you can do is record your I/O workload with Blocktrace, and then later on you can replay it with BT replay. So you just put the trace in, it'll reproduce exactly the I/O pattern that you had before. So we would actually love to have some real-world workloads to test with. So if you have anything interesting, send it to us. We'd love to have it and see how the schedulers behave with it. And this thing, this unpronounceable thing, is a Markov chain tool. So it's a statistical representation of a trace, essentially. And the advantage of doing this is you go from some multi-gigabyte trace, possibly, if you've got a really IO-intensive workload over a fair amount of time, and you turn it into a Markov chain, which may only be a few hundred K. So it's a lot easier to, you know, send around to different people, and you can also, you know, generate a I/O run of any length you like from maybe possibly just a short input. So that it plays back these things just using BT replay. So it just plugs straight in there. This is kind of the way it works. What you do is it scans through your block trace, looks at all the queue events, it gets a state vector for each one of them. So you've got the direction of the I/O, whether it's a read or a write, you've got the size of the transfer, you've got how much it seeks from the previous one, and how much delay or think time was between them. And you put that, you count up the number of transitions from one state to all the others. And you put that into basically this directed weighted graph that shows the probability of going from any one state to any other state. You actually don't record the exact numbers. You put them into buckets because otherwise the Markov chain would be really big. So you've got kind of ranges for each value. And that ends up being a really sparse kind of adjacency matrix. So it's stored as a hash table. Okay. So I'm now going to look at a few kind of interesting performance results that we've seen. This one's basically just showing the effect of anticipation. So this is IO zone running four processes. It wouldn't do this if there was just one. And it's, you know, running synchronous IOs. And as you can see, the read tests there are way faster with CFQ and anticipatory than they are with deadline or no-op. Okay. This was on a two-way Itanium box. So it wouldn't make much difference, though. This is just purely because you've got anticipation happening. This was on one SCSI disk, I believe. Okay, so yeah, the two on the left, they're way faster. Another thing I mentioned before, CFQ does do anticipation as well. That was kind of the building up thing. Each one has the features of the one below it. Okay, this shows a situation where they don't do so well. This is a trace replay. It's from NFS traffic that was captured from the servers at the School of Computer Science and Engineering at UNSW. So you actually get really high latencies with CFQ and anticipatory here. So in this particular workload, yeah, you end up getting a lot nicer performance with deadline or no-op. This shows kind of how the different schedulers scale with more processes. So this is, yeah, a bunch of random readers, and we're measuring the bandwidth here. And this is also on a single disk. So you actually notice that anticipatory does really well here. It scales up really nicely. CFQ, not so well. It kind of, you know, plateaus there fairly early. And that's looking at the latencies. So, yeah, anticipatory also doing fairly well there. Okay. In the end, you know, it depends. It's very dependent on your workload, which is kind of the whole point of our project. We're going to figure out how it depends and document that. So, yep, anticipation is great. It doesn't always necessarily help you. The simpler schedulers will tend to give you a lower latency. CFQ in particular often has higher latencies than the others. But it's also solving a different problem. It's trying to do fairness, which none of the others really do properly. So this is how things look when you put software RAID in the picture. You go from the block layer, instead of going down to the scheduler straight away, you go through this MD or DM driver. There's two of them. But they do basically the same thing. They basically split up your requests to go to the right disk to be serviced. And the scheduling only happens down below that. So the problem with this is, anticipation isn't really going to work most of the time if you've got striping happening, because instead of being logically sequential, being physically sequential, it's not anymore. You're just kind of jumping all over the place there. The other thing is, you can't really do fairness at that level. So the pathological example of that is you've got 21 processes running, 20 of them are only accessing one disk, and one of them uses all 20 of them. So it's going to end up getting way more of the available bandwidth than it should if you're trying to give each process a fair share of the entire logical device. And this is what we're looking at with a lot of our testing, seeing what works and what doesn't here. So we've actually got a 20 disk array, so it's SATA running on port multipliers. And yeah, we found that anticipation doesn't help you a lot there. Okay, hardware RAID has all these same issues, but you don't actually know anything about what's going on inside the device. So that's really tricky. You also have no control over what's happening in the device. So with software RAID, you can at least possibly solve these problems. With hardware, you kind of have to guess what's going on inside. Okay. So some of the bugs we found so far. Right. So deadline has these batches, right? And it counts how many requests have happened so far, and once it hits a certain number, it stops the batch and starts a new one. If you continue to batch in the same direction, it wouldn't reset the batch count and you'd end up just doing one at a time, which wasn't terribly efficient. So that's been patched, that's in 2.6.24. And new batches were starting at the lowest sector number request, which caused this to happen. So the four processes on the left are reading from low-numbered sectors. The ones on the right are reading from high-numbered sectors. The blue is before the patch. The Moroni color is after the patch. So that's kind of a contrived workload there, but it shows the problem quite neatly. So the fix for that was starting at the request that had the closest deadline rather than starting low. Okay, and anticipatory had this thing where when you started a write batch, it would actually start with the last write batch finished, which didn't make much sense because you're probably doing a read batch in between, so you have no idea where the head actually is. So again, starting at the closest deadline was kind of the best thing you could do there. Moving on to some of the bugs we haven't found fixes for yet. This is an interesting thing with anticipatory. What is happening here is it's doing synchronous I.O. From a 50 meg contiguous chunk on the disk. It's reading it in 64K chunk transfers, but it's doing it in random order. So you're not moving the head very far, but it's kind of moving around in a small area. But since this is only one process doing synchronous I.O., there shouldn't really be any decisions to make. It should just go straight through. Anticipatory is doing something it shouldn't. It's really doing quite poorly there. And CFQ's a little bit funny, not quite sure what's going on there. So I only noticed this about a week and a half ago, so we'll investigate further. This shows what happens when you kind of scale up the number of processes, not even very high. So this is on our hardware array, software RAID array, rather. This is doing the same thing as the last slide, but going up with more processes there. What we think might be happening with CFQ here is that it's enabling the idle window when it shouldn't. The idle window is kind of like its version of anticipation. It kind of waits a bit for more requests to come in rather than switching over. There's a race in there, the details of which I don't recall exactly, but it sometimes enables that when it shouldn't. It isn't exactly clear how to fix that at this stage. And that shows what happens to latency in the same test. Just goes up and up.
Can you go back one slide?
That one? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so some ideas we've got for improving things. Okay, so for deadline, it doesn't actually allow batches to be formed from requests that are just close together. They actually have to be contiguous. In practice, this means a lot of your batches are only one request because you end up merging things that are contiguous. So allowing requests that are close by but not quite contiguous to be in the same batch does improve things. We've done a bit of testing just lately with 256 processes doing random I.O. You actually gain 50% throughput if you do that. So with less processes or less random I.O., it's not quite as extreme. It turns out deadline and anticipatory are actually fairly similar in what they do, apart from the anticipation. And so anticipatory does have a few optimizations like seeking backwards and a few other little funny tweaks that it does. But there doesn't seem to be any reason why those shouldn't also be in deadline. So if you can decide effectively when to anticipate and when not to, or just have a tunable to switch it on and off, it seems like they could be combined into one scheduler. So that's just an idea at this stage. We don't actually have any code for that. And it also seems like you might want to do fairness, but with different performance optimizations underneath. So you might want to have, say, NoOp running on a flash disk or something, but you might want to also have per process fairness. So possibly moving fairness into its own layer almost, and not having it be this whole scheduler might be a good idea. Okay, so if you want, so this is kind of what you might do with a software RAID situation. If you want to do fairness properly, it has to go up the top there before you actually go into the MD driver. There are practical problems with this, but I think they can be solved. So, for example, at the moment, MD is just going to pull off requests as fast as it can from that incoming queue. So you can't actually schedule there at the moment. It bypasses scheduling entirely. But that can be fixed. So that would leave just kind of your performance enhancing stuff down the bottom on the individual spindles. The other thing about doing fairness on this multiple spindle setup is time slices aren't going to work that well necessarily, because you've got multiple heads to keep busy. A single process may not actually be, well, it probably won't be using all of them at once necessarily. So possibly some kind of token bucket scheme might be useful there. This is just ideas at this stage. We might try implementing some of this stuff a bit later on. Okay. Yeah, I kind of mentioned this already, but if you've got, for example, a flash disk, it doesn't have a head. You want to do kind of a completely different set of optimizations than you would want to do for an actual disk. Yeah, you do have sector size, which is different, though, to actually moving your head around. Also, you've got reallocation works a bit differently. So you really want a different scheduler for that entirely.
And you want to know the erase size, which is currently not advertised at all.
Right. Yep.
Even if there's a gap in between, because then you can turn two writes into a single write, which doubles your performance.
Yep, exactly.
And then if you have arrays of flash chips, you can actually overlap writes on some arrays.
Yep.
By having multiple chips write at the same time, multiple blocks.
Sure.
Actually, most upcoming flash will all do that probably in hardware. So what you actually want to have is you want to have multiple requests outstanding at the same time, which actually means that you may not want to merge into one large request and things like that. So it actually may make sense to, yes, merge, but not to merging excessively.
You have
like
to
that.
Know a lot.
Right.
And you do want to probably sort
right.
the queue anyway, because sorting it is how you find the merges. So.
Unless your transport layer
yep.
is SATA, in which case you can only have 32 requests outstanding in a safe way. If you want to go unsafe, you can have more, but as long as you want to stay safe here,
yeah, but right now we actually quite often, at least on benchmarks, we actually get one or two huge requests.
Okay.
So because then we hit the limit of how much EIO we have in flight at all. So sometimes I think flash will show us things too. about wheel leveling? I know sometimes it's in hardware, but I think sometimes it's in the file system, which is perhaps not the best place for it. So it would be better in the scheduler than the file system.
Yeah, quite possibly. So, yeah, definitely a lot of work to be done there, evidently. Okay. So, yep, that's about all I have for the moment. You can see some of our results and the code for stuff like the IAM archive chain stuff on our website there. So, questions, discussion? Yes?
Block trace and BT replay. Presumably you have to have the same number of disks on the system you're replaying it on as you did on the system that was recorded on.
Yeah, sure. Well, if it's done in a software RAID, you don't necessarily have to.
It's not.
Okay, so that is a bit problematic. I don't really know of any good solution for that.
What was the kernel preemption mode for these tests?
Oh, this was voluntary preempt.
Voluntary. Did you guys try any other modes? No.
We have not tried that yet.
You might find some fairly significant differences.
Okay.
Even without preempt RT in the game. But just for RT, you'll see about 75% degradation on the current T624 kernel versus, let's say, preempt none or voluntary kernel. And desktop tends to lie somewhere in the middle.
Right. Yeah, there's already a massive number of variables to check. It's definitely, sure. Yeah.
Is there any, like just wondering from like doing a simulated perfect disk or simulated, you know, so that for something like Willy's case, you could actually just do a simulator up that would pretend that there was 3,000 disks.
Replay
on top of
it. Well, there are disk simulators out there. I haven't really used any of them.
It's whether you do a QEMU or just do a another Linux.
Yeah, sure.
It just looks like a disk but doesn't actually do any hardware tracks.
Right. Yeah, that would probably work.
I think that'd be pretty challenging just because we don't really know that much. The OS doesn't really know much about the geometry of the disks or how the firmware is doing on them.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the same disk. Yeah, but.
Well, if you want to compare.
If you want to just get the scheduler eked out, maybe you get something out. I don't know. But then everyone can plug in their own model of what disks should look like, and eventually someone will work with it.
You don't need to know that stuff, because in the block trace you've got where the I.O. completion occurs, so that tells you exactly how long every I.O. took in that trace. So you can use that to simulate the disk when you're replaying. You don't do the I.O. completion until the delay that was there actually occurred. Yeah. So you could do it with a complete and utter fake set of disks, because you know exactly how long every I.O. actually took.
Sure.
Though,
if you change the ordering of the requests, that doesn't hold anymore. So yeah, it's tricky.
Not only that, there's other things going on inside this firmware that you may not capture in your trace that you would see in real life when you change order, or if you pound one area of the disk, the disk might temporarily go away for a while to clear that area, do recovery sort of things. So.
Things like NVRAM sitting in the hardware RAID arrays as well, which will give you
false zero seek.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of these things, I mean, it's not uncommon to see 16 gigabytes of RAM in high-end NVRAM and high-end RAID arrays, which means that any workload that's smaller than that is basically going to work like a flash disk.
Yeah, right.
Well, not just in RAID arrays, I mean, we can be seeing it in single disks as well.
Yeah. Not that sort of amount.
Not that quantity, but we will be seeing, very, very soon, we'll be seeing flash RAID in single disks all the time.
Yeah, that's actually one of the issues with ensuring fairness as well. Your writes will actually seem to complete instantaneously if you've got write back. So it's a little tricky to balance that with the reads.
So has anybody volunteered to look at other out-of-tree schedulers?
or two? There aren't really that many available. We are definitely going to be looking at tree schedulers. Haven't done that much with them yet.
Not to make it any more complicated, but did you guys start playing with the priorities on some of the processes during IO, say bumping those above the kernel daemons, things like that?
Well, most of this is doing direct IO. So it's not going through the file system at all. So kernel daemons shouldn't really be doing much.
So in that case, if you were to change to doing buffered IO for all your writes, how would you affect the actual schedulers? It's quite possible that the schedulers are tuned much more for a lot of the write back than coming from a single thread.
They quite possibly are, yeah.
And so your results may be completely different because yep. That's the normal case for everybody that uses the system.
Yep, but for trace replaying, you're probably replaying something that's coming from a file system anyway. So it'll have the same characteristics.
It will affect things like the anticipation and stuff like
yes.
That.
Yes. Yeah, well, you can never really replay exactly because, you know, the app behavior might change depending on when requests are. Yes.
So optimizing at a higher layer may give you much better performance than optimizing your disk scheduler. Disk scheduler, if it's fed crap, it can only give you crap.
True.
And the write back code is where a lot of the optimization really needs to happen there.
So you're saying was we should instrument the schedulers to determine how much crap they're getting?
Sure.
Are you saying it should be per file system?
Pardon?
Are you saying write back should be per file system?
Actually, right now, write back quite often is per IO. That's right. How BDFlush does it. But the problem is that probably does really well for large files when you actually write them. But a lot of write patterns aren't for files at all, they're for items. A lot of regular write outs is literally writing out IO data.
Yep. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we.
You can create as many of those as you want, but you have to scale down the test system from the aforementioned 3,000
tests. we do have a couple of workloads like that. There's an online transaction processing type thing that we've got.